Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show, and I hope everybody is having a happy 4th of July weekend, kind of a weird one this year with the 4th landing on a Friday. I'm assuming it's going to be a madhouse wherever folks are out there. I know I, for one, am going to try to avoid the crowds.
Same here.
We're just talking about weekend plans. This show will cover a little bit of everything. We'll talk about the camera regulations that were discussed during the commission meeting. We'll get into some base camp setup stuff. Just little, I won't even call them tips and tricks, but I always forget how many years it took me to get dialed at like a base camp hunting setup.
And
you know, there are people listening where it's like, this is their first season or maybe second season, and they're still kind of figuring it out. So Dave and I still get questions about some of the stuff that I just take for granted, like ice, like water, all that stuff at a base camp. We'll hop into that stuff, and then we'll just kind of meander around for a little bit. We'll talk about some scouting Dave's been doing, maybe a recent trip of mine through the center of Nevada, but all of that is coming up, so don't go anywhere. And Dave,
yeah,
you got cameras out in your unit.
I do. I've got a few cameras out. We set them up way back in June. We're going to head back out and do some more scouting, looking for some critters. So that brings us up to the regulation.
Camera regulation.
Camera regulation.
You had a little moment of panic about getting them.
I had a major moment of panic because if we had to have them off the mountain by July 1, I wouldn't have been able to do it because I had a family situation came up this last weekend.
Yeah.
And my plans to get out there weren't going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, dude. But thankfully, the commission removed that portion of that proposal.
Right.
So as of right now, August 1st, cameras have to be off the landscape by August 1st.
Okay.
The one thing that I'm not sure about, and I'm still trying to gather some information about it, are the fines or the penalties for leaving your cameras and stuff on the landscape after that deadline date.
What are they proposing, like a daily or?
So what it was is the original one was like, if you're caught with it, you could lose 3 points, privilege points or bonus points.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that didn't seem to phase a whole lot of folks. So with the new regulation, it would go from 3 demerit points to 12.
Right. And I think after 12, don't you lose your license for a while or something?
I think it's for a year.
Yeah.
I think you lose hunting privileges for 1 year.
What was discussed as far as like, what was the reasoning behind that?
You know, that wasn't really covered in the meeting. Was like, why moving it from August 1 to July 1. And I think that was one of those issues where there wasn't enough information to warrant August 1 to July 1 move.
Yeah.
So they removed it, tabled it, and I don't know if it's going to come up at a later date or not. As of right now, it's dead in the water, and August 1 is still the date, the first day of the first hunt.
Yeah, they've got to be off prior to that. And I know when we talked about it on the show, we both were scratching our heads of like, why a whole month early?
Yeah.
Because there's no season that opens in July. And I understand the August 1 thing because I've been on those hunts in years past where guys are ripping around checking cameras and you're like, man, I got a tag right now.
Yeah, I'm hunting.
Doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that happened several years ago to a friend who was sitting at a ground blind for a cow elk hunt.
And someone came ripping
and
up.
Yeah, it was a guide. I'm not going to mention the guide that did it.
But okay.
It was a guide pulled up at like 8:30 in the morning, right to the guzzler, like drove his vehicle right to the guzzler. Got out with his music playing to check his cameras.
Yeah, that stuff made me crazy.
Yeah, yep. And you knew he knew what was going on. He knew there was a hunting season. He was a guide, and he knew there were blinds there. So it was just one of those things. It was like, you know, what's the deal here? But so it eliminates that.
Okay.
And yeah, we were talking like July 1. We're like, so anyone hunting in October, that kind of thing, you don't have anything. You're not going to get any real decent data.
No.
Even turning it off at July 1, even folks hunting in August, you're going to be like, well, yeah. And landscapes can change, green ups can change, things can dry up here and there. And you don't find out about tags until the end of May anyway. So right. you've got four month, or five basically. Weeks. Yeah, yeah, 5 weeks to get cameras up. So
when will that come back up again?
I don't know. It didn't. There was no like return to commission date.
You
know,
oh, like, hey, okay.
Revamp this and let's check it out next time.
Any idea who was pushing it?
No.
How to get introduced? No.
It was one of the commissioners, if I recall.
Okay.
Proposed it.
Hmm.
So.
We should do a little research on that and track that down because I'd be interested in chatting with them or emailing with them and trying to figure out, like, what is your reasoning behind this?
Yeah. What causes that? Yeah. Because I know when Pat and I went out in the beginning of June and we set up a few cameras in some really nice spots. We went to a Guzzler and there were already 6-8 cameras there.
Just
stacked on every post and pole.
Remind me again, the wireless transmitting ones are illegal. You cannot use those.
Correct.
Okay. So any of those, I'm not going to name brands because I might be wrong about it, but any of those that you can check remotely with any kind of a satellite or phone
connection.
So yours are all the old school. You got to go and actually pull the card.
Yeah, mine are the super old school. Are they? Yeah, I've had these cameras for...
D batteries in them and everything?
No, luckily I bought the first generation of the A.
Okay, yeah.
You know, but it takes like 12 A's.
Yep.
You know, which is fine. And, you know, it's like a 3 megapixel. It gives me the picture I need. These new ones are, you know, some of them are like 25 megapixel and take these like...
I've got
Ansel
Adams
type photos. I'm like, I don't need that.
It'll give me the weather, the temperature, the moon
humidity,
phase,
the everything. You know, I can get on my phone and figure that stuff out too. But like the ones I've got, I could leave in the field. I think they say the battery life for a 24-hour cycle, just have them running at all times. Battery life on those is like 6 months in the field.
Oh, okay.
With 12 batteries.
Yeah. So heading out this weekend,
yes,
this will be the first time you've checked them since hanging them.
Correct.
I mean, besides just the obvious answer of like animals, you know, a big bull moving on there. What do you look for on those as far as like patterning stuff or?
Well, it's tough to pattern, especially, you know, as the moon phases are shifting and everything else. You've got, you know, what I'm really looking for is use.
Like, okay.
Is the water stable there? Is it consistent? I've got one camera that's actually in an area that is just a feeding area. There's no water or anything. It's just a camera that's facing this really nice meadow that had solid green up happening while we were out there. I wanted to see how that habitat was transitioning over the next month or so to see if animals would still be using it, say, in August, or is it going to be dried up and just
barren,
just not used any longer. You know, they could be using it in June and July, but once August, the end of August comes along, they've eaten it all out or it's already turned yellow and they've moved on. I'm just kind of really trying to determine habitat and what's going to be a focal area for these animals during my hunt so that I can kind of focus my geographic range on those habitats that are going to be beneficial.
What about bear boxes? Do you use them or no?
The bear box to hold my camera?
Yeah, you know, the metal.
I've
got a couple of those.
I haven't because the way I set my cameras up, if somebody wanted to take them, they just pull it right out of the ground.
Well, and that's what I always figured for the extra $50 or $40, whatever it is for one of those bear boxes. I'm like, they're just going to cut the cables anyway and take. Now they got me for a camera and the $40 for the bear box.
Yeah. And I placed one camera in an area where it's like on the edge of the field and anyone cruising through is going to see it.
Right.
I thought, well, it's an older camera. It's one of my first ones I got. And I thought, well, if someone ends up jacking this one and taking it, whatever, that sucks that they're doing that and that that they're jerks in that context. But it's like, okay, whatever. It was one of the ones watching habitat for me. Okay. We saw a lot of activity, a lot of prints and elk and deer tracks throughout the area. And so we thought, oh, okay, I'm going to slap it up here and just see what's kind of feeding in this particular area.
I call them sacrificial lamb cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
The old D-cell battery ones.
Yeah.
And
I'll stick
this one where people can find it.
Yeah.
My nicer, newer ones, I'm hiding these things.
Right, exactly. And that's what this one was. It was one of the old school. It's like as big as a binder.
Right.
You know, it's got the it's just, yeah, it's not even, doesn't even have the little SD card. It's got the big old card in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really like practically big. A floppy disk.
almost, yeah. And the biggest is like 256, you know, megabytes, not even gigs. It's whatever. Yeah. Slap it in there. Okay. Pat and I, we came across several cameras. I mean, we're not going to mess with them, people.
Yeah.
I'm not going to touch somebody else's camera. I mean,
you know, the one thing I do when I'm in there, though, is I do take a hat, like, because I'm always wearing a baseball cap, and I hang it over the thing so it's not running down their batteries.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do the same thing. Yeah.
Because otherwise they're going to wind up with 50 pictures of my goofy rear end walking around looking at stuff.
Yeah, taking a piss or something.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, hang my hat over it. Yeah. And then they get the one picture, but I'm not burning through their batteries.
Right.
I always think that's kind of like the common courtesy move.
Right. Yeah.
But
I agree.
I could be wrong.
No, I agree. I do the same thing. I usually have like, I'll take a t-shirt and walk up and, you know, it'll obviously take a picture of me and I'll throw it over it.
Yeah.
While I'm doing stuff. Cause yeah, exactly. I don't want, you know, they don't need to have 35 pictures of me wandering around and setting my camera up or.
And it's not like they're missing any animals or anything when I'm in there. So
no.
I'm just like, man, you don't need 50 pictures of me.
No. Yeah. Then I'll pull the shirt off.
As soon as you leave.
Yeah.
Yep. Good
and
to
then
go.
Leave it alone. Yep. You know, it's not my camera. I'm just respecting other hunters and that kind of a thing. So
I'll ask you one more when we come back after the break here. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry, proudly sponsored by Battleborn Tree Service. I had one more question, and it's not necessarily about cameras, but we're talking about covering other people's cameras when you're in an area. Dave, have you ever come across like a Gatorade bottle zip tied to a fence post or something claiming a spot?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
There's no blind anywhere to be seen. They haven't done anything. And it's either a Gatorade bottle or a Ziploc bag with a baling wire on it. And it's tied to a piece of bush or a T post or something or a fence line. And you're like, really? Like, I'll be hunting this spot,
these dates
for the entire season of bull elk. And you're like, what?
What's your take on those?
I ignore them.
Okay. Yeah,
If they have a phone number or something, if that's the spot, like, you know what, this is an area I want to concentrate on for my hunt, I'll give the person a courtesy call and kind of get a feel for, like, well, you know, like, what are you really doing?
Yeah.
Because to claim you're going to be hunting there the entire season and to expect hunters to, like, not
it's public
go
land.
In there. Well, yeah, it is. And I've talked to hunters before, like, yeah, actually, I'm going to be there for the first 10 days, and I plan on putting the blind up and I'll be like, okay, cool, man. It's yours for the first 10 days. After that, I'll be coming in.
Try not to be an a-hole and respect, like, hey, this you're putting the work into this spot.
Right.
I've done that before where I fired up the InReach, and it was a couple out of Elko that were going to be hunting. Here's the thing that kind of, well, it just made me less respectful of the request. I found three different spots a ways apart, and it had the same dates.
Yes.
And I was like, well, you can't be in all three spots. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I fired up the InReach, got in touch, and then got some clarification. They're like, well, we'll probably hit this guzzler, this spot at this day and blah, blah, blah. And they were cool about it. But yeah, I thought, man, give me a break. One was on the other in another unit on the other side of the highway. There was a guzzler over there and I found the same couple's name and the same dates. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, we had that happen one year in area 015 antelope hunting.
Yeah.
We went to there's some decent water up there, but this was a year there wasn't a lot. And this individual had the notes at almost every single spring or water or pond, little bit of water we went to. It was right there, and he had like a Home Depot T-post with it wrapped on the T-post. And we're like, dude. So that was the same year that we didn't see it on one spot, so we built a blind.
Okay.
And then we were getting ready to leave, and my friend Jody's like, oh, dude, what's this? He walked over. It was one of those notes.
Oh, gotcha.
So we called the guy and said, hey, man, we didn't see your note. We built a blind there. The dude went nuts.
For real?
Oh, yeah. F-bombing us, the whole nine yards. You better not be at that water when I'm there. It's not going to be good for you, blah, blah, blah. And he just went off on us.
I'd be like, hey, buddy, it's public land. Relax.
Well, and Jody kind of got a little defensive with the guy, and we went back out. That dude went back out there and burned our blind. Like, burned
it.
Set fire to it.
Oh, man.
Which I thought, for one, you're out your mind burning something out here. We went back and everything was all burnt to a crisp, and all the poles, he pulled everything down and put it in a pile.
What an asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For
so
real.
That was like 90, that was like 93, 94. And we were like, oh my God.
There is so for those listening, there is a statute interfering with the legal taking of game.
Yeah.
Setting fire to someone's blind.
Yeah.
I would consider that interfering with the legal taking of game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we didn't know that back then. We were just like, dude, this guy is straight up nuts.
Yeah.
So we ended up shooting. He ended up, not me, but he ended up shooting a really nice antelope that year.
Well, there you go.
It all worked out. But yeah, so I don't know why folks think it's okay to put your name on every single water source out there.
I've had it happen before where if I glass somebody up, and they're obviously looking at the same group of bucks or the same herd of elk or whatever, and somebody's making a stalk or whatever, it's like, okay, I'm not going to be that guy. You guys do what you're doing. No big deal. I'll find more animals.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bottle thing kind of rubs me the wrong way if it's spread out. And I'll tell you too, here we'll kind of segue. We'll veer off into public land encounters. I heard a story about me secondhand at the diner in Wells one year, elk hunting out there, Spruce Mountain, and I didn't realize it was a couple, and they were dropping each other off, or like the husband was dropping the wife off at a blind, and then he was going somewhere else to sit for the day. So I went into this spot like O-Dark 30 on the quad. And I knew there was a blind in there and there had been a bottle. Anyway, like a couple days later, we go into Wells and this woman is telling my dad about some jackass that drove up on a quad, blah, blah, blah. Well, if I'm going up a trail, where I'm going with this, if I'm going up a trail and it's the only trail into a guzzler and there's a quad or there's a side-by-side or a vehicle of some kind, I'm generally like, okay, someone's in there.
Yeah.
Well, she was getting dropped off.
So there was no
vehicle. So I'm kind of slowly creeping up this canyon and I'm like, okay, no vehicle, no vehicle, no vehicle. I'm going to park like half a mile away and I'm going to hike in. So I go in there and she was in the blind and I'm like, how the hell did you get in here? There's no vehicle or anything for miles.
Yeah.
You know, so it happens. I would encourage people, be respectful of other hunters while you're out there. Not everybody is going to be like the guy in the story that Dave shared.
No.
Try to be respectful of other people's hunting attempts or whatever. The bottom line is, man, don't be that guy claiming 15 different water spots. Don't be the person. Give each other a little grace in the field.
Like,
hey, it could happen to the best of us.
Yeah.
So anyway, we took up a huge chunk of that segment. I also wanted to go into the water situation in the central part of the state.
Yeah.
Now, where you're hunting, you said they had that eastern part of the state, they had a light winter or below average.
Yeah, they did. It's from what the record showed, it was below average. Even parts of central Nevada, it still had just right about an average, a little bit below average winter. And it was definitely represented when we went out there to go look at the habitats and look at the water to see, check out some of these springs. We had 14 springs that we went to check out, and 11 of them were bone dry.
Oh, no kidding. Only three had water.
Only three had water, and one of them we're pretty sure isn't going to have water come probably mid-July. Probably when we go back up, go back up there this weekend, high probability it's going to be pretty close to dried up.
Oh, so you're looking at two water sources then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, two water sources. And that doesn't include some of the cattle troughs that some of the ranchers are pulling the water right out of the springs right into the troughs.
I just took a trip out to the central part of the state around Austin. And man, if you have a deer antelope tag in that central part of the state, there was still a good bit of water everywhere. And there's still snowpack in the Toyabes.
Oh, wow.
Takimas are dry, but the Toyabes, there was snowpack. the area we're in, great water. So,
oh, nice.
I can't speak for the
Arc Dome area.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there still snow up top?
There's still
on that
snow or? Up top
oh,
there.
Wow.
So,
okay.
I mean, small snow fields, but still, hey. Like, hey, to see it at the end of June and
that's awesome.
Yeah. We went in, we stayed a couple days at Groves Lake there around the Kingston area.
Yeah.
That creek is ripping. It's full. There were plenty. We saw plenty of deer in there.
Nice.
I mean, easy for me to sit here and sorry if I'm burning you and you have a 17 area 17 tag.
Right.
But for those of you listening with an area 17 tag, it ain't me. There's good water in there for sure.
Oh, good.
And the body condition on the deer looked great.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, we did. We saw a couple deer when we were up there in my area, and they did. They looked really, really good.
Super
body
healthy.
Yeah, just nice and just really robust looking deer.
So I know Unit 17 for mule deer will put the fear of God in people as far as like it's big country,
oh,
a lot
huge.
Of it's wilderness.
Yeah.
But I will say the areas we kind of were knocking around in, there's a lot of deer in there this year. There's a lot of water, so they're going to be spread out. But if you've got that Area 17 tag, don't be afraid to go out there and put some effort into it because everything we saw looked good. Yeah, well, I think you'll have a hell of a hunt if
you've
got one of those
tags. It's good to
tags.
Know that they've got some good water. Did you get up into 15? We have friends with a 151 tag.
Yeah, no,
I'm
did
assuming
not.
That's probably got a, I mean,
just
that's
unit
just
16
north.
And 17.
Oh, okay. Yep. So the monitors and.
Well, we went into the Takima Range.
Oh, okay.
On the other side of Big Smoky.
Yeah. Okay.
And then into the Toyabes. But like I said, Takimas are definitely drier, but the Toyabes, plenty of water.
Yeah.
So people should have a good hunt.
Awesome.
Do not go anywhere. Coming up on the show, we'll talk a little bit about base camp preparedness. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show, you can always get caught up. Just go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or if you're an Apple user, just search for Nevada Backcountry on Apple Podcasts. All the past episodes are there, and thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. And I won't talk too much about the Howa Superlight, but I will say they had a bunch of their chassis guns dipped with the American flag. I can't think of a more fitting rifle for the 4th of July weekend. Go check them out at LegacySportsInternational.com. Let's talk about base camp stuff, Dave. Without getting way off the rails here, I did not make the NBU Guzzler build. This is something I'm glad I found out prior to going out and setting up base camp for my hunts. Man, this is the time of year. Check your vehicles. Make sure you know what they're capable of hauling. I purchased one of those. It's Scout is the company, but one of those cab over campers. Well, I noticed it rode a little low in back. So I get ready to go do this Guzzler build. And Friday comes. I'm excited to get off work. I'm like, all right, I'm hitting the road. This is going to be awesome. I'm going out to Ely. By the time we put, you know, whatever it was, 15 gallons of water, propane, all the stuff for the weekend, et cetera, we go to load it on my truck and the back end sinks down to where it's practically touching the wheels. And I get up underneath it and I look and the bump stops are about a quarter inch off the frame. And I went, oh man, this is not going to work. So I installed an airbag kit on the rear end of my truck and lifted it back up. Everything looks good now, but we went out and like we talked about last segment, kind of knocked around the central part of the state. Where I'm going with all this is base camp stuff. Man, if you got a new trailer this summer, you're planning on heading out, check all that stuff before you hit the road. And that's my plan for my hunt is with that cab over, use my truck while I'm out there or even tow a quad out there and use that. And then just leave the cab over as kind of a central base camp. We've gotten a few questions about base camp stuff, and I wanted to bring up, I treat base camp like my hit the refresh button
yes.
for a lot of these hunts.
Yeah.
It's not my primary, I'll call it residence for the time, but it's somewhere where I like to go. I can refill water. I can cook. I can sleep out of the elements for a day, hit the reset button, and then go back out if I need to.
Yeah.
That's kind of generally what you do with your trailer as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my little adventure trailer that holds my side-by-side in it. Yeah, it's... like we used it as our main camp on the antelope hunt.
Antelope hunts are different. Yeah.
But if I'm going to be backpacking in for a day or two or something like that, my base camp generally is my pantry.
Great analogy.
Yeah. It's like my pantry. Yeah. If I got to come back and refresh with water, with some meals, what have you, clothing. So that I'm not having to pack everything I need for, say, a 4 or 5 day run, I can do 2 days or a day run, come back, get some stuff, and then go check out another area.
Shower off. Well, you got an outdoor shower.
Yeah, I've got the outdoor in. I built that indoor shower in that enclosed trailer. So it just, I'll tell you.
I know. We've talked
about it. Oh, my God. That's a game changer, man.
Yes, it is.
Being able to take a shower.
That sheep hunt with
Pat,
he told me to take that hot shower, and I was kind of hesitant. I was like, man, I've been on long trips before. I don't know if I need a shower quite yet. And Pat kept saying, no, you got to check it out. Oh, man, I took that hot shower. It was like a new man going into the mountains the next day.
It really is. Yeah. It just like revitalizes you.
Well, that's what's
so nice.
I wanted to talk not just the shower thing, but as far as base camp water and ice stuff, because I leave all my ice there. So I've got my coolers. I also try to bring a folding table.
Yeah.
Because when you do get an animal back, it's nice to do. You know, in the field, it's like, get the hide off. Get this thing quartered out, get it out of the field, get it on ice. When you get back to base camp, you can rinse meat off. So I always tell people, make sure you bring like one of those big 5 gallon, the blue thing. They sell them at Sportsman's and
just like about what everywhere. We had in pull water from.
Yeah, exactly. Have something like that to rinse your meat off, get it back on ice, have your coolers there. Another thing with the ice, and we did a show, it was probably this time of year last year, but keeping ice frozen in the field. I highly recommend go down to U-Haul, get some moving blankets, or honestly, most people listening probably have them. If you're setting your coolers in the shade, those moving blankets are a game changer for keeping ice for longer.
Oh, yeah.
So make sure you do that with your coolers. And folks, invest in a quality roto-molded cooler for your ice.
Yeah.
Or... like what you have, what'd you do with those igloos? You like extra insulated them or something.
Yeah, because on a lot of those igloos, it's insulated around the body, the main body that holds this up, but the lids are hollow.
Yes.
So I just drilled a couple holes all around the lid.
Okay.
And then got that, that great stuff. You pick it up.
The expanding foam deal.
Yeah, the expanding foam stuff. It comes with a nice long deal. Okay. And I shoved it in there and just
filled it up.
With that expanding foam stuff. And I'll tell you, it's completely changed because that lid, it's hollow. So
did
it gets
you notice
hot.
A dramatic difference?
Oh, huge.
Yeah, you
huge.
Did.
Ice
okay.
would last like 3 days in a regular igloo. Once I foamed it and shut it and then put my wife's a thrift store fanatic.
Yes, she is.
So she ended up acquiring like several like winter quilts.
Okay.
Blankets type thing.
Right.
So I use those to cover my...
while you're out hunting.
Well, I'm out hunting. Yeah. I cover my coolers with them. Now the ice will last 2 extra days in those igloos. But then the big cooler I have...
That grizzly.
Yep. Yeah, that ice will last 10 days in that thing.
Yes. As long as, and I'll bring this up, seasoning them.
Yes. I was going to say that.
Yes.
You got me hooked on that. Like,
yep.
Before you pack it, you throw a ton of ice, like... Yep. Bottles that ice the
frozen
that you froze,
big water bottles. Yep.
Throw it in there for a few days before the hunt and get that inside of that cooler good and cold. So when you throw the ice in, you're not losing a third of your ice to a hot cooler.
Yes,
already from the get go. That's
we've
genius.
Talked about it, and that was the biggest difference I noticed for keeping ice longer. Was just seasoning the cooler before you head out.
Yeah,
because I can't tell you how many times too. I've had people say like, oh, I invested in this Yeti or Grizzly or Pellet, whatever the brand is. And they go, man, it sucks. It's not much better. And this, that, and the other thing. The key to the whole thing is seasoning them before you head out in the field. So make sure you guys are doing that. And then one last thing on the ice bit, I can't stress it enough. This time I'm looking right now as we sit here, it's over 90 degrees. It is hot. And guess what? It's not going to get any cooler come August. And that is absolutely crucial to making sure that meat is as usable as possible, is having that ice ready, getting the animal on ice. I hate hearing those stories of, oh man, I won't eat mule deer. Early season mule deer tastes terrible. Well, it doesn't if you just take the time to get the sucker cooled down.
Yeah.
Get
it
on ice.
Yeah. I always carry one of those small tarps.
That's a great idea.
The little, you know, just a, I think they're like 5x5 or 3x5, but I put it on the ground. I put the animal on it.
So
I'm not having to wash. I mean, you know, there's not a bunch of dirt and garbage on the animal. So yeah, if I can't get the animal, like you're saying, if I can't get the animal into a shaded spot while I'm processing, then I can use it to like a little teepee type deal and shade the spot.
Yeah.
So, and then use the hide as the other tarp, but. You know.
Well, we experienced that on your antelope hunt.
Yeah.
As far as you can legally take a quad or a side-by-side to the kill site.
Yeah.
Directly to the kill site. That doesn't mean one canyon over to see something else. Take it directly to the kill site. And we did that with your side-by-side where we angled it so we had shade to clean your antelope.
Right.
And that was huge, getting that thing broken down in the shade, then ripping out of there and getting it on ice at camp.
Yeah.
That saved our bacon.
Yeah, washing it off, getting the dirt and the chunky stuff off, and then in the bags and in the cooler. And that meat was phenomenal.
Oh, that's the thing, though. Early season stuff is great. You just got to put a little effort into caring for it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, base camp stuff that's just really important. I've got my first aid kits are always, important. My nephew took one of those Havilons and...
Yeah,
right down to the bone, man. Just, he was gushing all over the place.
I'll piggyback on that and say, I hate to be a safety Sammy, because there is something to be said for just going out and adventuring. But, man, if somebody's on medication or something.
Oh, that's true.
Figure out what people, you know, hey, Uncle Claude is on, you know, whatever, blood thinners or this, that. Figure that stuff out before you get out there.
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing. When it's 90 plus degrees, you've got maybe an older hunter with you. The last thing you want to be doing is standing out in the middle of nowhere going, I don't know, he's throwing up, he's pale, he's, I don't know what the hell his problem is.
I had a friend who's allergic to bees. I didn't find that out till we were on the mountain.
Till they got stung.
They got stung.
Ooh.
And he was going into anaphylactic shock. He couldn't talk. He's like staring at me and turning blue. And I'm like, what the hell's your problem?
Yeah.
And he's like pointing at his backpack and, you know, he's getting all lethargic. I was like, what? And finally it clicked in my head. I just like,
something's wrong.
Something ain't right. So I opened it and I saw his EpiPen in there. And I'm like, you effing moron. How about you? These are things you should probably tell your hunting partner when we're out in the field and that you have allergies. So,
and I never take offense if people ask like, hey, Henry, you got this, you got this, you got this. I'm not going to go, man, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
I'm going to go, oh, yeah, good call. Yeah, I got this. I got that. Here's, you know, if something happens.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I stabbed him 5 or 6 times.
And he was good to go?
Yeah. You only have to hit him once, but.
Yeah, you did, just for
the
fun
other
of it.
Four was just because I've never got to use one of those epis and it's kind of cool. No, he was fine. I just zapped him and he was good to go, but I was pretty upset with him. I was like, dude, you can't. Like,
we've all been there where you sit down on like an old log and there's a wasp nest or something in it.
That's a good one, definitely to.
Just medications list. Yeah. Talk to your hunting partners. Figure out what's what, who needs what while you're out there. Yeah. Make sure you're as prepared as possible before you go out. Have the conversation with hunting partners and do not go anywhere. We are up against the clock, so we're going to take a quick break. On Nevada Backcountry, we will be right back on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this holiday weekend. I hope you all are out there celebrating on public lands. Big win for outdoorsmen. So the whatever the heck they called the big beautiful
the big, bill beautiful bill
passed. However, all land sale stuff of public lands was stripped out of it. Congratulations to those of you that took the time to write your representatives, to call your representatives. That was a big win for us. And unfortunately, as most of this stuff goes, the fight's not over. It'll come back again at some point. However, for right now, I hope you're out there on one of those little corners of the map that Mike Lee wanted to sell off.
Yeah.
I hope you're celebrating Independence Day in some of those cool spots.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it was funny. We talked about my trip last weekend. The exact spot where we dumped the scout and set up shop next to that creek was on that map to be sold off.
Really?
Yeah. That area. So it was a nice little win to be out there and go, yeah, right here, this is what they think they can sell off. And who the hell is building affordable housing in Kingston Canyon?
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, congratulations, everybody. Huge win for sportsmen in the state of Nevada and sportswomen. Let's wrap up the show. A few more. Dave's over here looking at broadheads. I think we both got hunting on the mind.
Oh, buddy.
But let's go through a few more things. If you know what you're doing, you've set up wall tents over the years, you've been doing it for most of your life, maybe this doesn't apply to you. But we're going to go through a few more little things you should always have at base camp. We covered water. We covered some of the ice storage. And then one I got from you, Dave, that's been an absolute game changer because we roll out one of those outdoor rugs.
Oh, yeah.
A rate.
Yeah.
That was something you talked about on the show, God, 2 years ago, I think now.
Yeah.
And I remember tucking it away and going, I should throw a garden rake in there. Rock free. And in fact, I was thankful for it. I'll make fun of myself for a minute. I got up at night. All the lights off in the scout this last weekend. And normally we have it sitting in the bed of my truck. So with the tailgate down, you've got about a foot. And so you step out onto the tailgate of the truck and then you go down the step ladder to the ground. Well, I forgot we had taken it off my truck so we could go check out hot springs.
Oh, geez.
So I get up in the middle of the night. I go to step out of the scout. Well, off my truck, there's a good like 14-inch step down to the ground. Well, I had raked out all the rocks and put the rug there. So I go to step off. Well, there was no tailgate to step onto.
Oh, Jesus.
Ass over tea kettle. I grabbed the step ladder. That careened off something metal. It was a huge racket. I fell out of it in the middle of the night. But thankfully, because
no
of
rocks.
You, there were no rocks. I am unscathed.
Yeah. You were unscathed. Very nice.
Yeah. So it was
all
nice
right.
to have a soft dirt landing spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 o'clock in the morning when you got to pee.
The last thought I had was just like looking up at the stars as I'm going out of the back of the thing. Anyway, so a rake, an outdoor rug. What else, Dave?
Well, definitely for base camp, you know, definitely letting people know where that is. You
Ooh,
know, just safety
call.
Purposes. You know, yep. I always give the wife a map.
That's a good idea.
Just a paper map and puts it on the fridge of this is where our base camp is.
Yep.
And then I do like a polygon.
Here's where I'm going to.
These are the zones I'm going to be focusing on my hunt. I always have that set up.
I used to do the same thing, except now I have that in reach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it attaches your grid coordinates to it.
Right.
So I always send a, you know, hey, I pulled in, I'm here.
Right.
And then
and
worst case scenario,
it.
That's there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I have the inReach as well. I still play that old school map thing. I don't know.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Just gives me a sense of comfort. But other things, you know, for base camp, we covered quite a bit.
The first aid kit stuff.
Yeah, definitely the first aid kit. I always, when we bring extra fuel and stuff, I always try to hide that stuff somewhere. You
Great
know,
idea.
Because we had all of our fuel stolen on Pat Sheep Hunt.
Fuel and a generator stolen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, he thought, oh, we're so far out here. We'll be fine. I don't have to lock the generator up. You know, no big deal.
Yeah.
We came
Famous
back.
Famous last words.
Yeah. We came back. The generator was gone and 15 gallons of fuel were gone. Yeah. They took the three gas jugs and the generator. I don't know who it was, but it was like.
Whoever you are out there, I hope you enjoy. I hope that generator broke within the first day. The fuel thing too. And I, you know, look, it's not going to prevent if somebody wants to, and they're out there with cable cutters, they'll get your stuff. But just one of those simple, in fact, they make them for game cams. the locking cable. They call Python cables.
Python cables, yeah.
I take the fuel canister, the extra water, whatever, and I lock that to something. And I figure at the very least, they're either going to have a really bad day trying to saw through one of those steel cables with a Leatherman, or it'll be enough of a deterrent that they're like, okay, move on, find something that's got unsecured stuff.
Yeah, but exactly.
I will bring up on that note, gas. I got out to go scouting and I forgot to fill up in Elko. I got all the way out north of Wild Horse and got parked in there and had less than a quarter of a tank left. Cause I think my last fill up was like Winnemucca. I pull into Elko, I eat. I'm like, okay, it's 8 o'clock at night or whatever. I want to get on the road. I leave Elko and I didn't get gas and I did not have a spare gas. That's why I had to get up and I had to drive to Oahe and fill up at that, whatever it is, Duck Valley.
Yeah, right.
The Indian reservation there. Yeah, I had to fill up there. So, always, 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 people, spare gas more than you think you'll need.
Yeah.
Because that could have been, luckily I didn't go super far in there that night, but I stopped, parked near a creek and passed out in the bed of my truck.
Yeah.
Well, when I got up the next morning, I went, oh, buddy. This could be bad. So spare gas for sure.
Spare tires. I always carry two because that sucks, a flat tire. You know, base camp is just pretty much the things that you're going to need for, depending on the amount of time that you're out there.
Right.
Enough food, enough ice, enough water. If you're backpacking in somewhere, make sure you've got, you know, possibly one of those water pumps.
100% water filtration system.
Yeah, filtration system. Those things will, a gallon of water is what, 8.35 pounds?
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot to be throwing in the backpack, especially if you end up with an animal up there.
Oh, it adds up, for sure.
So, and just things that make you comfortable, things that you know you're going to need.
Yes.
You know, for the amount of time that you're going to be away from your main camp. You know, if you're just sleeping under the stars, that's cool. If not, you get a bib, you know, little bibbies or little tiny tents. Be safe out there. You know, we got some gorgeous public land here in Nevada, and we should all be getting out and really enjoying it, especially after that big win of having that removed out of the bill. It's still ours.
Yes, it
is. And let's get out there and enjoy it and just be safe out there, man, and no fires.
Just be smart about it, people.
Yeah.
That is going to do it for Dave and I this weekend. Enjoy your holiday weekend. Congrats on the big public land win. And we will be back next week on Nevada Backcountry.